Have smart talk, something better than yelling for no reason. This is Portland's Talk, 620 KPOJ.
Welcome back to the Norman Goldman Show. I'm Adam Klugman, sitting in for Norman Goldman. This Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, Christmas season, this is the place in any season where justice is served and where fierce independence is the norm. Don't you love that? He must have loved himself that day he came up with that. Right, he was thinking of slogans for a show, and he said, where fierce independence is the norm, right? Because obviously it's double entendre, the norm. But I love it, and I love Norman Goldman. Thank you so much, Norman, wherever you are, for giving me this opportunity to sit up here in Portland, Oregon, plug into L.A., and blast my own personal madness out to the world. You have great callers, smart, articulate callers. Pleasure to be here. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, callers. Thank you to Norm's crew. Show is not over yet. I'm just doing a mid-show, thank you. It's kind of like the wave, you know? You get up in the middle and you just say hello. But we are going to go to calls. Let's go to our first caller. You're on the Norman Goldman Show with Adam Klugman. What's up?
Adam, I wanted to bring up a question that Tom Hartman brought out to the audience. And he asked, what was the best way that the 99% Occupy Wall Street movement, what would be the best way for them to really make a statement? And I say that the best thing they could do is really go after the politicians that are obviously representing the 1%, whether they're Democrats or Republicans.
I wonder about that. I think anywhere it's going to make a lot of good. Good statements. Here's my thought. I don't know what Tom's response was, and he's a pretty smart guy, but my feeling is that I'm a little bit wary of the Occupy movement kind of starting to dialogue with power too soon. I don't know about you, but I'm concerned of the co-optation, right? So that we get in there and we start having conversations with power, but the power structure in this country is so sick and so contagious that what happens to every good person who ends up in that system, they end up getting, rather than being the cure, they become assimilated by the disease. And I hate to kind of talk in science fiction terms, but I think we're dealing with a political system that is that virulently ill. So I wonder if we're not ready for that step, that maybe what we really need to be doing is convening a conversation with ourselves that's less about our political system, because I think the real problem, and I was saying this in the first hour, I think the real problem is with our economic systems. We need to re-democratize our economic systems, and punishing individual politicians, holding them accountable for carrying water for the 1%, I think is absolutely essential. But I think that might be a step three. So I don't know if I answered your question, but that's kind of where I go with it. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Lonnie in Eugene. Lonnie, welcome to the Norman Goldman Show. You're on with Adam Klugman.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I was calling earlier when you were talking to that woman about Ron Paul, and you know, you were talking about looking at things in a new way. Mm-hmm. I about fell off my seat. Ron Paul is nothing new, and he's you know, he voted for the Patriot. You know, the whole thing, he has stuck with the Republican Party the whole way, which tells us exactly who he is. He's a one percenter. Let's just be really clear. He is not a quote progressive.
No.
He wants to shut down the school. He wants to privatize everything: the schools, the airports,
right?
Every single thing. And you think that Citibank, Bank of America, all these people, once they have complete power, the only way that we have any control in our government is by us maintaining oversight. We don't have a dysfunctional government. We have a treasonous GOP who refuse to be reasonable. And essentially, we're having the bankers bully their way, muscle their way into everybody's lives and say, we're taking over. I really appreciate listening to that gentleman that you just listened to, that you just talked to. I went on his website. I'm definitely moving over.
Oh, good.
And I mean, these are the kinds of things we need to do, but to encourage a person like Ron Paul, who wants to make women's rights an illegal activity from birth control on, I mean, it's an outrage that Ron Paul is actually considered a reasonable candidate.
Lonnie, thank you so much for the call. I am very ambivalent about Ron Paul. People keep saying, take another look. You know, when it comes to domestic policy, I'm not so down with it. I don't know. I'm taking another look, but a reticent look. You're listening to the Norman Goldman Show. I'm Adam Klugman, sitting in for Norman Goldman. This is the place where justice is served, where fierce independence is the norm. We have another great hour coming up. We'll be right back.
Now, another hour of Smart Talk, 620 KPOJ, Portland's Talk.
New York to the hills of Los Angeles, a voice is rising to serve justice. This is the Norman Goldman Show, the home of fierce independence, intelligent dialogue, and passionate logic is right here, right now. Sitting in for Norm, here is Adam Klugman, host of Mad as Hell in America Radio. Heard Saturdays on AM 620, Portland's Talk, KPOJ.
Welcome back to the third hour of the Norman Goldman Show. I'm Adam Klugman, sitting in for the Norman Goldman. If you want to know more about me, you can go to madashellinamerica.com. That is the name of my show, Mad as Hell in America. As the lady said, it airs Saturdays from 3 to 6 on AM 620 KPOJ. But you can pick it up on live stream at madashellinamerica.com. You can also send me an email at adam@madashellinamerica.com. That makes sense. And if you want to check out who I was in a former life, you can go to adamklugman.com. I used to be a media consultant. I once believed that we could transform the Democratic Party from the inside out. I'm not entirely sure that that's possible anymore. But if you go to adamklugman.com, you can see some of the work I did as a progressive media consultant. Now I'm just a guy with a microphone sitting in for Norman Goldman. And in a moment, we're going to have a guest. His name is David Swanson, and he's author of a new book called When We Outlawed War. And like I've been saying, I know it sounds like something science fiction out of the future on that day when we outlawed war, but in fact, it already happened. And it happened quite some time ago, believe it or not. War is illegal in this country. And we're going to talk to David Swanson, who's going to tell us what the hell happened. Because it sure doesn't look like if it's illegal. And if it's illegal, I'd like to put some people in jail. Let's start with George Bush and Dick Cheney. But right now, let's go to calls. I'm looking at the board here. Let's go. I can't read it. Let's just go to calls. Tell me your name. Go to the first call.
Hey, what's up, Adam? This is Sean in Seattle.
Hey, Sean.
Thanks for taking the call. Thanks for being one of the good guys.
Thank you.
A couple things about Ron Paul. I support him for now. I think he's an incidental Republican, and Barack Obama is an excellent honorary Republican. I don't think he ever voted for the Patriot Act, as the last caller started to say.
Who, Ron Paul? Yeah, I wasn't sure about that. Has Ron Paul ever voted for the Patriot Act? I'd be very surprised.
Really doubt. I'm going to look that up, but I really doubt it.
Our next guest will know.
Yeah. Anyway, the main things I wanted to say, everything starts with an idea. I think personal sovereignty is the time that's come. We need to recognize that there are certain things, torture, brainwashing, that should just never be done under any circumstances to any human being. And we're going to have a new world order whether we like it or not. So let's try to create a grassroots new world order of the people.
Wait, let's stop there. What do you mean? You say we're going to have a new world order, like it or not. What do you mean? Explore that a little bit for me.
I think it's just a natural evolution. You look
right
through history, the way things come together, I think it's just inevitable. And they're going to try to force their fascist version of it on us.
Right.
But if we can come up with a competing one instead of just saying, let's have none at all, which is just completely unreasonable. And the way to do that, I think, is to just accept that all these nations are together and corporations, governments are one and the same. So to respond to that, we as the people of the world need to voluntarily unite in some type of a union that transcends national boundaries and cultures and economies, a global union of sovereign Terrans.
I dig it. I really like that. Sean, I want you to listen tomorrow. I'm going to have this guy on, Jeremy Rifkin, and he's going to make a very solid scientific case for the very thing that you're talking about, a new world order that he calls an empathic civilization. And there's really a very logical, historical, and kind of, what is the word I'm looking for? Kind of rational case to be made for a new world order that's based on empathy and not based on free market capitalism, which is the one that they're trying to push down our throats. So, Sean, thanks for the call. Listen in tomorrow and give us a call. This guy, his name is Jeremy Rifkin, and he's going to be with us for 2 hours tomorrow to try to take us all the way through this. Let's go to the next call. I just cannot read the screen from here. So introduce yourself, whoever you are. Welcome to the Norman Goldman Show. You're on with Adam Klugman.
Thank you. I'm Bill from Seattle, and I just wanted to say two things. Wish I had more time to say them. One is people should stop bashing Barack Obama. He's one of the three, because he's one of the three most progressive presidents we've had in the past century. The other two being Lyndon Johnson and Franklin Delano Roosevelt. This man has done a tremendous job as president. If people simply realize that he's kept this country out of a full-blown depression through the policies he's implemented, the social legislation that he's passed has been groundbreaking. And it's going to be recognized.
Like what? Give me a couple of hard examples of what you mean, because that's a pretty bold statement. I don't happen to agree with you that he's the most progressive president since Lyndon Johnson. So give me a couple of examples of what you mean. Persuade me.
Well, number one, the health care legislation that he passed.
See, I don't think that was progressive at all. Go on.
Well, I understand that you don't think it was progressive, but it was. I mean,
why?
He's gotten less credit. I'll tell you why. He's gotten less credit for pushing legislation and getting it through that created health care for 32 million additional Americans than Bill Clinton got for trying to get health care and failing. Bill Clinton didn't move the health care ball down the field one inch, yet people forgave him and loved him. Barack Obama, the legislation that he passed certainly is not perfect. It relies on private capitalism, private insurers to provide the insurance coverage, which he had nothing to do with. Insurance companies dominated this country for 100 years before Barack Obama got into office. If anybody thought he was going to be able to displace that system in 4 years in office, they were complete fools to begin.
Well, here's one of my big problems. Aside from delivering, you know, those 32 million people that you talked about under a mandate over to a private health insurance industry that has no caps, right? So he created a legal mandate, if it stands, and I believe that it will. He delivered all of these people under legal mandate to a private health insurance industry, but didn't mandate any caps. So what's going to happen? Right. So what he really did was what he ended up doing, in my mind, was just enriching the coffers of the health insurance industry. Have you ever heard the expression half measures availed us nothing? I think that this health care bill is a half measure, and I think it's going
it's
to avail
measure.
Nothing.
I think he blew
an opportunity of a historic proportions. We didn't even have a discussion about single payer in this country. We wouldn't even allow it. In fact, people were arrested when they showed up at Senate Finance Committee hearings that Max Baucus was holding they were not allowed to be testify at a Senate Finance Committee in America on single payer because they didn't even want to have that conversation. So I don't think that is progressive legislation at all. I think it's a half measure, and I think it's going to avail us nothing. I do.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right that it's a half measure. But it is a measure that has moved the ball down the field. You don't have to do everything completely in one step, and it was impossible to do. You know, people are criticizing Barack Obama for the legislation, but the legislation came out of the House. Everybody thinks that Nancy Pelosi is a wonderful progressive, but the legislation came out of the House.
I don't think Nancy Pelosi is a wonderful progressive. I think Nancy Pelosi works for the man, and I think Barack Obama works for the man. I think I want him to be the guy that you say he is. I really, really do. My problem is that I want to see him show some backbone. Why did he start the healthcare conversation in the middle of the mud puddle? That's where he starts everything, in the middle of the mud puddle. But when you're in a tug of war, you start over on the far end and you say single payer. But you know what? You know why? The health insurance companies didn't even want America to know what single payer actually was, because if they did, they would have gone for it. That, to me, is what a truly progressive, a Teddy Roosevelt would do. A Theodore Roosevelt would do. You take a bold stand and you let them pull you. I think he works for the man, and I think he starts in the middle of the mud puddle. I think that we have to hold him accountable to the principles of hope and change that he promised in 2008. But I do appreciate the call. I got to move on. I want to make room for my next guest. I believe that the next guest is, I don't know, I cannot read the screen from here. I've got to solve this problem. My next guest is, do we have a next guest?
Do we have a next caller?
Next caller, who is this?
This is Stuart from West Seattle.
Stuart from West Seattle, you are the next caller. Welcome to the Norman Goldman Show.
A caller earlier talked about defunding the government. And you and your guest talked about the power of voting with our dollars. I say defund the forces of greed that dominate both our government and the world. To do this, we may need to spread the word about what greed is. So, Adam, could you offer your definition of greed?
I will in a moment when you go first.
Okay. I say that greed is the willingness to screw others and screw our Mother Earth to get more than we need.
Okay. That's pretty good. I'll try to be, I won't judge. I think your definition is good. I think greed is when you put your self-interest ahead of the interest of the community. Does that work for you?
Yeah, and on an individual level, it's greed when we support predatory businesses, when we enable and empower our predators that prey on us, our children, our community, and our Mother Earth, when we have better choices.
I think that we can't outlaw greed because we couldn't come up with a legal definition of it. But what I do think greed, and I do appreciate the call, thank you. I think that greed is one of those things that we have to transcend. There are lots of human qualities that are in the mix of our political system and our social systems that are calling us for transcendence, right? I mean, this is the moment. We're melting down the planet with our greed or our human self-interest and placing that above the well-being of the planet, putting that above and before the well-being of the greater community in our own country and in the world. So, this quality of greed, this notion of putting our own self-interest before the interests of anything else, which might be a more accurate definition of greed, is costing us a lot as human beings. And so we have to find a way to transcend that within ourselves. So it's also an inside job. I say that a lot. It's an inside job and an outside job. You know, people say, I want to change the world, but please don't change the world until you've changed yourself. Because we have lots of people out there who want to change the world, and they change the world before they've done any work on themselves. And man, God, that's a dangerous equation. We've got Dick Cheney's changing the world, and that's bad. But he's not done 1 hour of work on himself, and that's apparent from the havoc that he has wreaked on the world. Okay, so we're going to move on to our next guest. Speaking of wreaking havoc on the world, certainly one of the things that wreaks havoc on the world is war. And there are wars that are fought primarily for profit all the time. And you may not know this, but there was a time when war was outlawed. Our next guest is David Swanson. He is author of War is a Lie, Daybreak Undoing the Imperial Presidency and Forming a More Perfect Union. He blogs at davidswanson.org and warisacrime.org. David Swanson holds a master's degree in philosophy from the University of Virginia. He has worked as a newspaper reporter and as a communications director, including press secretary for Denis Kucinich's 2004 presidential campaign and media coordinator for the International Labor Communications Association. David, in my mind, is a supremely articulate advocate for peace and one of our nation's most engaged social activists. He is author of an important new book, When We Outlawed War. You can find out more about David at davidswanson.org. David, welcome to the Norman Goldman Show.
Hey, Adam, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I have two questions for you before we start talking about your book. You're a guy that I would go to get answers. Did Ron Paul vote for the Patriot Act?
No, he voted against it, and he's voted against renewals of the worst provisions thereof.
Thank you for clarifying that. I didn't think so. It didn't ring true when the caller said it. And then your definition of greed, how would you define greed?
Oh, I think you got it fine. it's putting selfishness to an extreme. I think in particular selfishness around possessions and acquisitiveness, and I think we do have an epidemic of it.
An epidemic of it is right. And I do think we can legislate We can't outlaw greed, but we can legislate against the human tendency toward greed. And I think that regulations have gotten a bad name, because I think a lot of what regulation is attempting to do is to kind of regulate us away from our own worst tendencies. And ever since Reagan, there seems to be an all-out war on any kind of regulations at all.
Well, I think there's an interesting interchange between legislation and culture. And when you criminalize something, you also make it unacceptable. You stigmatize it. And when you stigmatize something, you make it easier to criminalize aspects of it and to enforce that criminalization. And of course, the people who put this country together were very early pioneers of recognizing the tendencies toward greed and other unproductive characteristics in individual humans while trying to legislate a utopian society. And so rather than expect individuals to be angels, they said, we'll create a government where no individual has enough power to do any damage, and they avoided giving presidents all the powers that, of course, we have now given them. And over the centuries, our legislature and our empowered presidents have at times barred powerful corporations and wealthy plutocrats from doing too much damage, and at other times given them free rein with predictable, disastrous results.
Our guest is David Swanson, and I got off track, but David, there's always questions. I'm always dialoguing with you in my mind. We need to go to a break, but when we come back, we are going to start with your new book, When We Outlawed War. David Swanson, check him out at davidswanson, davidswanson.org. Honestly, this is one of the smartest people I know. This is the person that I go to when I have questions that I cannot answer. davidswanson.org. The book is When We Outlawed War. You're listening to the Norman Goldman Show. I'm Adam Klugman in for Norm. This is the place where justice is served and where fierce independence is the norm. We'll be right back with David Swanson. Welcome back to the Norman Goldman Show. I'm Adam Klugman, sitting in for Norman Goldman. Our guest is David Swanson, author of a book, When We Outlawed War. David, we have a very hard break coming up in about a minute, but just give us a quick outline of your book, and then we're going to take the whole half hour and dedicate it to your book. But give us a quick outline before we go to the break.
World War One ended in 1918, and peace activists spent a decade of defeat after defeat after defeat, and in 10 years, in 1928, persuaded a Republican Secretary of State who hated peace activists to work night and day to get every country in the world to sign a treaty they had written to permanently outlaw war, to make war illegal, something which is still very much a work in progress, but which actually did a heck of a lot of good, and there are a lot of lessons to be learned from how it was done and the good that it did do as we carry forward.
David Swanson is our guest on the Norman Goldman Show the whole half hour. David Swanson's going to bat at home with When We Outlawed War. This is the Norman Goldman Show, where fierce independence is the norm. Welcome back to the Norman Goldman Show. I'm Adam Klugman, sitting in for Norman Goldman. This is the place where justice is served and where fierce independence is the norm. I want to get right into it. Our guest is David Swanson. He is author of a new book, When We Outlawed War. You can learn more about David Swanson at davidswanson.org. If you want to know what's going on, there's some news breaking and you want to get a really honest, progressive point of view on things, the first place I go is to davidswanson.org, because I want to know what David Swanson thinks about it. David, welcome back to the show.
Thanks.
So, your title of your new book, we just did a little teaser, so I kind of want to start at the beginning, and I want you just to have the rest of the show to talk about this. The title of your new book is When We Outlawed War. And when I first saw the title, it looked like a political science fiction novel set in the future or something, you know, that oh, wow, there was a day when we outlawed war. But the truth is, this is not fiction at all. It is political fact, and it is set concretely in the past. So take us through this.
Well, I'm never as concise as good editors would be. The title title is actually When the World Outlawed War.
Oh, I'm sorry.
A little bit more verbose. And it was the world. It was the majority of nations. It was the vast majority of the wealthy, industrialized, war-making nations. There was a great deal of hypocrisy in that colonies and territories and possessions of these nations were thought of as part of the world that had outlawed war, even though they were colonized through the threat or actual use of war. But it was understood in 1928, 1929 that war had been criminalized. Not wars that aren't approved by the United Nations, which didn't exist yet, and that loophole didn't exist yet. Not wars that aren't defensive, because there was an understanding that wars are always claimed to be defensive, and there was a need to abolish the use of warfare entirely. There was an idea that there was a process of civilizing underway that had done away with blood feuds, that was doing away with violence of all sorts, that had abolished dueling as a way to resolve disputes among individuals who now used courts of law to resolve their disputes. The idea was to apply that to nations, to have nations use courts of law to establish an international body of law and a truly independent court, and resolve disputes, and to actually prosecute war itself as a crime should it occur. But in the age to come, war would not exist. And this, of course, resulted at the end of World War II in the prosecution of losers of that war, for the brand new crime of having made war. And the Kellogg-Briand Pact was dragged out. It had already been forgotten by then, and used to create the crime of aggressive war. Very ironically, in that it had been specifically crafted to avoid creating the crime of aggressive war and to create the crime of war, period. But it immediately prevent and deter some wars in the late 20s, but it didn't stop World War II. It didn't overpower all of the forces of support for right-wing politics and armament. You know, we were building more ships and weapons as we were abolishing war and so forth. But it did create the crime of making war at the end of World War II, which at the end of World War I and every other previous war hadn't been a crime at all. And in the 30s, it created the understanding that lives to this day that you cannot gain territory through war, that anything seized through war is not rightfully yours and will not be recognized. And that remains the case, and no countries anymore gain territory through war. So
that is really a success of the Kellogg-Briand Pact. Let's go back in time a little bit. There was a very thriving peace movement in the 1920s. They called themselves the Outlawrists. Am I saying that right? I only ever read it in the book.
Yes, the outlawry movement, the movement to outlaw war. As slavery had been abolished, as dueling had been ended, we are going to outlaw war. We're going to put war on one side and legal, respectable behavior on the other.
And there was a Republican senator, right? His name was David Kellogg. Is that correct?
Well, Kellogg was a Republican. He was the Secretary of State. He was a senator earlier, but he was Secretary of State when this happened and when he gets credit for what he was pressured to do.
And he was pressured to do it. I guess there seems to be relevance to what we're trying to attempt now with the Occupy movement. That, you know, people have been calling in during the show saying, you know, it seems hopeless. There's nothing we can do. The system is too sick. And I'm saying, no. You know, we really can have an influence when we're organized enough. I mean, David Kellogg was a reluctant participant in the passing of the Kellogg-Briand Pact, right?
Yes, but his name was Frank Kellogg.
I am getting it all wrong today. I'm sorry. Frank, I have it written down as David Kellogg. Sorry.
Well, David is me, and Kellogg is the...
That may be where I got confused.
...former Secretary of State. But Frank Kellogg, he was a Republican. He was an angry, foul-mouthed, hot-tempered guy. He had been a lawyer. He had been a trust buster. He had been a senator who had shown no particular fondness for peace. In 1927, he was cursing peace activists. He couldn't stand them. And in 1928, he was working night and day to accomplish this thing in hopes of winning a Nobel Peace Prize, which he did. And now there's a whole bay and window called the Kellogg Window in the National Cathedral in Washington that honors him as a peacemaker. And rightfully so, because he did do it. And the Senate ratified the pact that he and Aristide Briand, the foreign minister of France, and the world put together. And the Senate voted for it 85-1. There was one senator who voted no, and he was censured by his state legislature. There was a huge movement for peace that wasn't some sort of fringe activist organization. It was absolutely mainstream. It had been growing prior to World War One. You know, this wonderful moment we remember from Christmas of 1914 of the Germans and the British troops ceasing fire during World War One was sort of a conflict of this growing movement of humanism and internationalism coming into conflict with the growing war machine and the novelty of horrific modern warfare. And when World War One ended, everybody who had been for peace and compromised, or been for peace and not compromised, was for peace very, very passionately. And everybody who had been for war had been for war under the guise of ending war with this one last war, the war to end wars. And so whether you were following through on the glorious war propaganda, or whether, like many Americans in the years following 1918, you were becoming increasingly bitter and resentful of how misleading that propaganda had been, everybody was for peace. And Andrew Carnegie and other robber barons were dumping lots of war profits into a massively funded peace movement. It was university presidents, senators, bankers. It was women's groups. Women in 1920 got the right to vote and a lot of power with it. It was across the population, and it was patriotic, because war was something those backward Europeans drag us into. You know, now we have a permanent warfare state. You know, the talk of peace is almost treasonous in this country. It's not accepted in the corporate media. We don't have senators leading our cause. You know, it's a very steeper climb today. And yet there are things being accomplished today, and there are lessons from the 1920s for how to do it.
Our guest is David Swanson. The book is When the World Outlawed War. You can get it at davidswanson.org. David Swanson, let me ask you this. Why did you choose to write this book now, and what are the implications for today's society and this idea that war has already been outlawed?
Well, I wanted people to know that there's a piece of paper we can hold up and say, look, war is a crime. You know, when they want to give corporations human rights, they dig up marginalia on court rulings. When they want to legalize torture or even war, they dig up old readings of Federalist Papers, you know, all sorts of nonsense that's not law. On our side, on the side of peace and justice, we have actual laws still on the books that we can hold up and point to. I also wanted people to know a success story, because when you haven't had one for a few years, and when your attention span, our collective attention span, is rapidly shrinking, people start to imagine you can't succeed at anything, even though we've had so many successes in this country and others through history. And I wanted to point to how it was done. It was done by people who didn't care if they won this week or this month or this lifetime, who were happy, like many of the women who worked to get women the right to vote, were happy to work for their lifetime, knowing they'd probably not succeed, but believing somebody in a future generation would. And they did it through organizing, through education. They did it without dumping their eggs in the box of a political candidate or a party or an elected official. They pressured the government as a whole on behalf of the people as a whole. They went abroad and organized and educated other nations and lobbied their governments to lobby our government. It was illegal diplomacy by peace activists in France who were drafting statements from the French foreign minister to the people of the United States that got this thing rolling. And it was relentless in the face of defeat after defeat after defeat.
Our guest is David Swanson. The book is When the World Outlawed War. DavidSwanson.org should become a standard resource for you. David, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, I want to talk about the responses that you've been getting from people as you've been going around promoting the book, about, you know, whether or not they agree that war should even be outlawed. I'd be interested to see, kind of do a straw poll of how people's attitudes have changed from the 1920s to now and how we kind of maybe moving in the wrong direction. You're listening to the Norman Goldman Show. I'm Adam Klugman, in for Norman Goldman. If you have a question for David, 1-888-321-6001. I'm Adam Klugman. This is the Norman Goldman Show, the place where justice is served. We'll be right back.
We wish you a happy holiday season from us here at the Norman Goldman Show.
Welcome back to the Norman Goldman Show. I'm Adam Klugman, sitting in for Norman Goldman. This is the place where justice is served. Our guest is David Swanson. He blogs at warisacrime.org and davidswanson.org. His new book is called When the World Outlawed War, and I know it sounds like political science fiction set in the future, but in fact, it is not. It is not fiction at all. In 1929, the Kellogg-Briand Pact was passed, which made war illegal. David Swanson, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. Good to be back.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about what it's been like to go around. I mean, you and I clearly agree that war should be made illegal, and you were outlining some of the benefits that suddenly, one of the benefits, like, it did not stop war, but one of the things that this idea of making war illegal did do was that we could no longer acquire territories, at least formally, through acts of war, and that seems like a good thing. As you've been going around promoting your book, do you feel that are people saying, yes, war should be illegal, or are you finding that people say, oh, no, that's ridiculous, of course war couldn't be illegal?
Well, I've spoken to large groups and on a few occasions, and typically I'll ask, is war illegal? And I'll get, you know, overwhelmingly, over 99% saying, oh, no, of course not. War is perfectly legal, which, of course, it was prior to 1928. And then I'll ask, but should war be illegal? And I'll get almost as much resistance to the idea that war should be illegal. And no matter how many times I see that, it never ceases to horrify me. You know, as someone who sees war as one of the very worst things we've come up with, right, as worse than rape or slavery or murder, in fact, as mass murder and incredible destruction of our societies, of our culture, of our economies, of our civil liberties, of our natural environment. I mean, war is perhaps the worst thing that our species has ever done to itself, and you ask, you know, should slavery be illegal? Should rape be illegal? Should murder be illegal? You know, a decade ago, you could have said, should torture be illegal? And you would have had universal approval for criminalizing those things. But war, somehow there's this exception for war. Lately, just, you know, the past few days, I've been getting, you should read Steven Pinker's new book, which is called The Better Angels of Our Nature. And this is, you know, a Harvard professor who's had an op-ed in the New York Times this week suggesting that in the grand, long centuries scheme of things, war is on its way out. The book, it does not make as strong a case as the op-ed does, and I'm probably going to write something about it in the next couple days, but it also doesn't make the case that people are making to me, which is, leave well enough alone and war will disappear of its own accord. Look at the statistics and the historical trends.
Right. Let the free market handle what I love. You know, that's like the libertarian view, the free market view of war. It'll just, the market will put war out of business. No, that has actually not been the case. I want to bring a caller on. Robert in Chicago, you're on with David Swanson, author of When the World Outlawed War.
Yes, sir. Let me grab my phone off the hook. He told me to make sure that I talked through my phone and not through the earpiece once I got on.
Okay, go ahead. We've only got a few minutes before they're going to cut us off hard, so go ahead.
Okay, I'm here now. Can you hear me all right?
I can, Robert. You're on with David Swanson, author of When the World Outlawed War.
Well, I just tuned in. I missed probably the first half of this discussion. And I, in fairness and full disclosure, I've got to tell you that I am 11 Bravo, which is combat infantry in the U.S. Army. So, obviously, okay. we have different ideas on war for obvious reasons. But that being said, I'm also a Christian. And I believe in the Bible, and I may be going against a lot of ideas here, but the Bible says that there will always be wars and rumors of wars, and even if you take the biblical guarantee that it's always going to happen out, I don't know how. It's like they say about gun ownership: if you when you outlaw guns, only the outlaws will have guns. When you outlaw war. And I'm assuming it is. I'm going to have to look this up and see what he's talking about because, you know, I've studied history, but I'm not familiar with this. But I will before the night's out.
Go ahead and read it, Robert. You really should. The book is When the World Outlawed War. You can get it at davidswanson.org. You should read some other things by David Swanson. I'm going to give David Swanson a chance to respond in the few minutes we have left. David Swanson, go ahead and respond to that. And thanks for the call, Robert.
You know, during World War One, you had U.S. government advertisements and posters with Jesus sighting down a gun barrel and ready to go off to war and preachers declaring that Christians must go kill the Germans. And after World War One, you had every major religious group and church organization in the United States opting to back the end of war, the outlawry of war, and sermon after sermon. I mean, this was a Christian-led movement that declared you cannot be a follower of Jesus Christ and tolerate war. And so it depends on which little bits of the Bible you choose to select to guide your moral life. I mean, presumably the caller doesn't follow all of the various things for which he ought to stone his daughter to death and so forth. You choose which bits of your sacred book to remember. And I have a certain preference for which should be looked to, including those from Jesus Christ advocating peace. And if you don't mind, Adam, in terms of the market handling things, I mentioned in this Steven Pinker book, there's a lot of talk about the connection between testosterone and the violence that leads to wars. So maybe listeners should think twice about the advertisement they're about to hear.
All right. Well, David Swanson has been our guest. The book is When the World Outlawed War, davidswanson.org. Put it on your bookmarks. If you want to know what to think, if you're not sure, David Swanson is one of the clearest thinkers in the country, a resource for me. David Swanson, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Anytime. Thank you.
So that was David Swanson, the book When the World Outlawed War. davidswanson.org is the website. I'm Adam Klugman, sitting in for Norman Goldman. And I want to just say what a pleasure it has been. We've had a great show. Norm has the smartest callers on par with my callers, who are equally smart. It has been a real pleasure to be here. Tomorrow, we're going to have a really fundamental conversation about how we really change things. You've been listening to the Norman Goldman Show with Adam Klugman. This is the place where justice is served. I'll see you tomorrow.